This is the Red Pill.
All right, everybody. How are you? This is Joseph Peterson. I'm here with my co-host, Steve McManus. How are you, Steve?
Joe, I'm doing well and happy to be here.
Great, great. We're here with the Red Pill Live. It is Monday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. And we have a very special guest tonight, a gentleman calling in from California. He is a yogi. Kundalini yogi practitioner, but he has much, much more knowledge in the area of yoga and the Kundalini. His name is Barry Racho. Barry, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Thank you. I'm doing well.
Great, great. So, Barry, I see here that you are a Kundalini yoga teacher. You study with esteemed teachers, the Yogi Bhajan, and please correct me if I botch up some of these names.
Gurumukh
and Mahan Rishi.
Yeah, that's exactly
and
right.
And you also have had... Oh, good. I got it right. And your Hatha and your Vinyasa training comes from Shiva Rhea, Brian Kest, and you're certified through Rolf Gates.
Yeah, Shiva Ray.
You have about... Shiva Ray. Okay. And you have close to 500 hours of yogic education. So you know what you're talking about here, and it's not just... Kundalini yoga, you know all the different types of yoga. You are a practitioner of all. How did you get into yoga practice?
Yoga sort of fell into my lap. In 1998, I was a new massage therapist in California, and I was looking for a place, a yoga studio, to maybe collaborate with and do massages. And the first studio that I contacted was actually a Kundalini yoga studio. And I didn't know what it was at that time, but the teacher enticed me to try a class out and take a class that day, and I did. And there was almost a familiarity with it, yeah. Like I've done it before, and it rung true to me. It's a very powerful, different form of yoga that really resonated with me, and that started my journey back in 1998. And of course, like I lived in Los Angeles, and there are many esteemed yoga teachers on the West Coast, so it was almost like a candy store. I got to sample and study with many teachers over the years.
That's good. Gives you a variety of perspectives on the different types of yoga and the ways to use it, I would assume.
Yes. Yes. Kundalini yoga is definitely a yoga of consciousness. They call it the yoga of awareness, and it's often compared to the other forms of yoga, primarily Hatha yoga. Hatha yoga is a very physical practice with asanas and working with asanas and in the physical body to find balance, balancing the sun and the moon energy, the male, the female energy within the body. But Kundalini yoga works with consciousness, and it was often compared to, like, if you're going to go to California from New York, you could take a train and you'll get there in maybe, a week. Or you could take a rocket and you'll get there in a couple hours. Kundalini yoga is considered the fast track of consciousness, since all yoga is supposed to raise your kundalini. And kundalini is just basically the creative potential of the human being.
Right. So, yeah, that's what I want to get into a little bit. There are the three types of yoga you mentioned is Hatha, Vinyasa, and Kundalini. Now, you've mentioned that Hatha is the more physical one, which is probably the one that most people are familiar with. Am I correct? The one with all the poses and the downward dog
and the various
poses
most,
that people do.
Yeah, it's the most popular. Hatha yoga and the poses are definitely more familiar. Kundalini yoga is also a very physical practice. However, it's a different style and a different approach.
Vinyasa
is just a hybrid of it all. I mean, Hatha yoga teaches you all these poses. There's hundreds and hundreds of yoga postures called asanas, from downward dog all the way up and down the line, you know, just many physical different positions. So that is, the basis of it all. And there's many different yogas that have branched off from that. They created their own spin on it. So vinyasa is a type of yoga where you're taking the Hatha yoga poses and you're kind of stringing them together along in sequences that connect from breath to movement. So vinyasa is like a dance, literally. And what you're doing is kind of like using the poses to keep, you know, it's a meditation in motion. So that's where vinyasa kind of fits into it. Yeah.
And kundalini is like you say, a fast track.
Kundalini works with consciousness. Yeah, kundalini, you know, it does work with the physical body, but kundalini is aimed to balance the energy within the body and to balance the hormonal, the glandular system. So when the glandular system in the brain, when the chemicals in the brain are flowing and balanced, you're going to have a good experience in life and you're going to have good capabilities as a human. You're going to tap into your potential and your intuition and your inner guidance.
Barry, it sounds a lot like it shares some of those aspects with Tai Chi and the way that they balance their energy out through meditative motion.
Right. You'll see, like, there's a lot of borrowing. There's a lot of similarities in all of the teachings, you know. So, yeah, definitely, when you're working with energy, you're working with energy centers in the body that are called chakras, which means rotating wheels. And, of course, they're invisible. You can't see them through an x-ray. Ancient enlightened beings have mapped out these energy centers in our body. There's many more than the seven that are famous. There's a lot of smaller ones and, you know, sub chakras, but they all have a major impact on consciousness. They all kind of represent a state of consciousness within the human.
Would would you say that the kundalini energy, that the core of kundalini energy that you're focusing in on and then pushing, you know, when you're focusing on your consciousness and getting energy to align so that you can do that, would you say that it is related in any way to your sexual core or your tantric entanglements that allow you to focus all of this energy and push it, you know, as it were?
Well, I think what I'm hearing is you're asking is if the sexual energy plays an impact in raising kundalini. Is that something what you're saying?
Yeah, okay, let's go with that, yeah.
Well, it's our primal energy is of a creative nature. We're always creating. There's creative energy running through every living thing. So the kundalini, and it's very dormant in many people, are very primal, just stuck in that primal state of consciousness. And the kundalini comes in, and it taps into that powerful energy through the breath and through the energy channels within the body. There's, you know, and it kind of heats it up at the base of the spine. And once you heat it up, they use these different, these various kriyas, which are actions, these steps of actions that help the energy raise up the spine. And as it raises up the spine, there's an opening of the heart center. There's coming out of primal mode. You start to feel the heart open and that you're connected with the world around you. And then ultimately, you feel like you're connected with the divine, with the infinite, which all yoga is kind of aimed at. Yoga literally means union in Sanskrit. So people think yoga, yoga, yoga. It's just a word in essence. And that word translates to yoke, to join together. So all yoga aims at eventually yoking with the divine.
Right. So now, if we could give a visual of kundalini energy, because I've heard it described as like the snake, or what exactly is kundalini energy? I get this visual picture of like these chakras that are in our body, like turning on this generator that sends a bolt up our spine and opens it all up to our consciousness. Is it something similar, like if I were to give a visual picture?
Yeah, you could think of it as that. You know, there's in the base of the spine where the first root chakra is, there's just a pool of energy, a reservoir of energy. And a lot of times it's just in very neutral form. But Kundalini is there, and if it's activated through the proper techniques, it will rise, and it will uncoil like a snake. And it will, the snake, the serpent, is just some symbolic visual that they've given it. But it does. It becomes
right.
aroused.
Because it kind of like
so,
crawls
yeah.
up your back, right?
Yeah, it crawls up your spine
exactly.
and So.
Okay. Now let's talk about chakras a little bit. You say there's. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got an analysis here. You know, when we're talking about the chakras, and they basically lie along the same center line pathway that the spine is also lined up in. So you go from your pelvis, your tailbone, what have you, all the way to the crown of your head. So that whole track. And I'm basically what I'm seeing in my larger view is that other disciplines see this same energy and they call it by completely different names. And they think of it in completely different ways than those that practice yoga think of it. And
like chi, right?
Yeah, and I'm looking at the correlation of like the fact that the human body has 33 vertebrae. There are 33 degrees in the Masonic lodges. So you would not put the Masonic people anywhere near the yoga people. They're totally two different things. And yet they deal with the same energy flow. They deal with the 33 degrees of masonry have to do with the 33 vertebrae in the spine. And the crown chakra, that they don't refer to it as that, but they refer to the architect of light, the great creator, as coming in through that top crown. And that you learn all of these various levels of energy through ritual, whatever, you know, all 33 of them, all of the different vertebrae of the spine, they're looking at it from that angle versus this angle, which is you're visualizing the real existence of these spinning wheels all up and down the spine, 7 of them or 30 of them or however many there are. And, you know, I've heard practitioners talk about people with blocked energy or with illness that the wheels will slow down or even stop and they need help getting them spinning again and getting the light to them, the light energy to them to help them glow like they should. And it just seems like there are similarities, and yet these people from different disciplines speak of these things with different terms. They're really kind of talking about the same thing, in my estimation. Maybe you have a different take on it, Barry.
No, I think it's true. I mean, people, like, just like all paths lead to the top. That's basically what happens. There's many different interpretations of the same thing. So that's how that keeps our life, it keeps the variety in life. There's not one way necessarily.
Very, very true.
And, you know, Kundalini is not the only way to raise. Kundalini yoga is not the only way to raise your Kundalini energy, but it's the practice that I learned and through the studies, you know, it's worked for me and it's something that resonates with me. It may not resonate with everyone.
Well, I think, different people will find different paths. And I also think culturally,
mm-hmm.
Every culture is going to have their own description of what that energy is, what the base Kundalini human, you know, the energy that flows through us is. Well, it's probably different in Asian culture. It is probably different in, you know, Islam. They have a name for it. But
mm-hmm.
basically, what you're saying is Kundalini yoga is a series of exercises and breathing, most especially, that can bypass, let's say, these rituals that, say, the Masons do or some of these other things, and like you say, be a fast track. What are some of the different exercises? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's not the only way. I'm saying it's a fast track compared to
right.
Hatha yoga. I'm not comparing it with religions or other types of
right practices.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. But you found it to be the quickest way to open up this Kundalini energy that we all definitely can benefit from. And do you have any examples like of some exercises that are done or You know, is there any specific way to do it?
Yeah,
I don't know how to put it.
There's many specific ways, but that's it. There's many techniques. They're called a set. It's like a recipe. The master of Kundalini Yoga is Yogi Bhajan. He brought it to America, opened it up. It used to be a very private practice, handed down through oral tradition by student and master. He brought it to America and made it very available for everybody. So he brought out all the different, they're called sets, and they're just like recipes. It could be, this is the spinal warm-up. This could be to activate the third eye. This could help open up your heart center. This could help increase your intuition, your radiance, your magnetic field. And each of these sets have many different components to it, including sound, chanting, mantras, hand positions, which are mudras, breathing exercises, which are pranayamas, and the actual exercises, and which culminate in meditation. So it uses many different aspects of yoga all in one system. And it's kind of considered a technology. So yes, there's many.
Well, yeah.
If you look online to research it, you know, you could just look up, you know, basic Kundalini yoga sets as taught by Yogi Bhajan, Bhajan, and someone could get a really great glimpse of what it is and how to apply it. But it's, you know, it's always great to study from a teacher when you're dealing with this, you know, reputable, respectable teacher who could guide you.
Right. And now this is something, the Kundalini yoga. I mean, I I've noticed there are some of these chains that are out there, like Bikram yoga, and that are kind of mass marketing yoga. Kundalini hasn't really reached that level yet, which I think is kind of good. What do you think of this mass marketing of yoga through, you know, through these chains that are trying to put it across the country?
Well, I mean, yoga is a multi-billion-dollar business right now. It's an industry in itself, and it's been westernized and it's been commercialized. And people are you know, there's a lot of controversy about it all. I mean, I think it's fine in a way because people are being introduced to it, even if it's just like a tip or a little bit. Hopefully it will encourage people to look further, study more, and realize, like, there's not just one yoga, there's not just one style. But, you know, it's getting out there. It's, you know, it's like everything. It's been commercialized, and a lot of it has been diluted and kind of turned into fads, you know, these trends. Even though Bikram yoga is a huge brand, he still is only using hatha yoga poses. You know, the poses from the hatha yoga system. And he just strung them together in such a way and delivered them in such a way that he decided, like, that was his style. So, and, yeah, there's a lot of controversy. Yeah, he named it. Yeah, and then, you know, you just have to be careful with these gurus because, you know, sometimes they're just encased in a lot of controversy. And Yogi Bhajan would say, don't follow me. Follow, you know, don't fall in love with me. Fall in love with the teaching. He wasn't looking, and he said, like, you know, I didn't come here to accumulate students. I came here to create teachers because this type of yoga, Kundalini yoga, it's timely. It's when you're working with your intuition, you're working with consciousness, it's biological, it's quick. You know, he wanted people to get ready for the energy shifts that are on this planet now. And it's through your nervous system. You know, the physical body is great. And that's why we do hatha yoga, to stay grounded in our physical body. But to evolve as a species, our brains and our nervous systems have to be conditioned and strong. He created a practice that allowed your nerves to become strong like steel. That's what he would say. So you could deal with the changing times. And he was really intelligent teacher as well. Many lectures and books that I resonated with. So,
well, many of the more enlightened yogi type people have seen what's happening now coming for a long time, and they've mm-hmm. actually maybe tried to step up their effort to help, because obviously that is part of the purpose here. And I believe yoga and opening your kundalini is very important for anybody who wants to, who is trying to make it through the difficult times that we're going through. It can definitely help. It can definitely help. Agreed?
It helps. I agree, absolutely. And another great aspect about kundalini yoga was that to keep yourself healthy and strong so that you can be a light force in the world and you could be a forklift and help others and not just always be about, oh, me and my sicknesses and my problems and then my, you know, out of balance chakras, which make me feel needy or lonely or greedy. You know, it works to balance you so you feel your best, you're living your potential, and then you could be of service to the world and help uplift and shine the light to those that are lost. So you can tell it's my favorite style. I just feel it's comprehensive, and it has, it's not a superficial practice. When it's done right, it's really a very powerful practice, and that's why I'm really passionate about sharing it and teaching it. Even in other class, even in my vinyasa or my hatha yoga classes, I always, you know, introduce people to elements of kundalini breath work and some kriyas. Even if you just, you know, plant a seed and, you know, if they like it, they will seek it out more.
Right. And do you find that people respond?
Yeah, and I think people are responding more and more lately. And kundalini is a little bit on the rise of popularity. Kundalini has a lot of music involved with it, a lot of chanting, mantra music, and some of the artists are becoming so well known. Like, there's one who is Oprah's favorite meditation artist, and you know, she had her on her show and just raved about Sanatana Kaur and her music, and that it's her favorite meditation music. So it's definitely out there, and it's becoming a little bit more popular or mainstream, say popular.
Do you find that it's creating
I'm sorry, what?
Do you find that it's creating an energy shift little by little? The more you put that positivity out there, then the more people feel it. It starts to tip the scales a little bit, yeah.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of music. The backbone of kundalini yoga is sound, is nod, N-A-A-D. And when you're chanting, you're repeating very high vibrational words and sounds, it's creating an effect. It's creating peace on this earth. You know, even though the earth seems like it's very volatile, maybe, you know, it would be more volatile without everyone meditating and praying and chanting and doing what they do. But it definitely creates a ripple effect. I know even if you just take a class, you go to a class with a teacher, you could feel a shift within the room. You could feel energy moving. You could feel it. There's some very powerful kundalini teachers out there. So
let me ask you a question, Barry. We lost Steve, but have you ever seen any amazing type of healings from people who have
absolutely,
you know, opened
people
up their kundalini?
People have healed drug addictions or any kind of addictions with kundalini yoga, because there's a lot of celebrities attached to kundalini yoga over the years. Everyone from Madonna to Chili Peppers to Demi Moore to Courtney Love have danced with kundalini yoga one time or another and studied with some of those esteemed teachers to help them stay off drugs. And so I feel like there's that aspect. There's been a lot of psychological healing and just... It's not a cure-all. It's more of a preventative type of yoga. It's not aimed to, cure problems, but it's meant to keep you healthy and to strengthen.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if you're out there eating McDonald's and drinking a lot of alcohol and smoking a lot of cigarettes, and then you come and do kundalini yoga... and think that it's gonna wipe out all the bad effects of that, I think you're kind of fooling yourself. It kind of has to work with a whole integrated plan. Am I correct?
Well, from my experience with it, when I really when I got really hardcore into Kundalini yoga, things changed naturally. My diet changed naturally. I became vegetarian naturally. I stopped drinking coffee. I just felt I wanted a higher vibration, a more clean energy in my system. So it does shift your consciousness in that way, where you're more aware of what you're eating, and you realize if you eat crap, you're going to feel like crap.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the benefits of it, of course. Now, just real quick before we wrap it up, I wanted to talk to you real quick about, you know, I hear these religious detractors, you know, and it kind of, you know, makes me sad that, like, it's two specific types of religion have really damned yoga as the mm-hmm. devil's work. And mm-hmm. you know, what do you think of that? Do you have to deal with that? Do you ever get those people? I mean, I know you probably live in areas that are very receptive to yoga, but have you ever gotten detractors and people have told you you're crazy and you're full of it and that you're spreading the devil's message or any of that?
I haven't been attacked per se about that, but I have had conversations with conscious people who were, you know, Christians even, and just asking about it, you know, how does this relate? So I've been blessed to have some intellectual conversations with people about it, and they were very open-minded. So, but it's out there, and, you know, I don't know if it was San Diego or Southern California somewhere, that school district, they were suing the schools for not, you know, the parents did not want them to teach yoga. They said it was too religious, but there was this big lawsuit that went on, and they found out, like, no, the way it's being presented, there's no religious aspect about it. We're not paying homage to anything. It's just stretching and breathing in a mindful, conscious way. So they don't just say that yoga is not a religion. It's not religious.
Right, and that's where I think people get confused. They think it's a conflict with their religion. And, you know, but actually having, you know, done some yoga myself and studied it, there's really no mention of God or any kind of, it's more just the divine energy that you're trying to connect with. No mention of, you know, any kind of evil or God or Satan or any of that kind of stuff. There's nothing religious about it. And I just think it's a misconception.
Yeah, it's a big misconception, just like many things in life. So
Yeah. Well, we need more people like you getting out there and spreading the truth about yoga and telling people, you know, what the importance is of opening the Kundalini. How do people get in touch with you? I know you're out in California, but, I mean, if people are passing through, maybe they can come visit your studio. Do you have a website?
Well, I just think the best place is on Facebook. To go to Barry Rocchio Yoga, and you'll find me there in my schedule. And I keep active on social media to share information and inspiration, and they can reach me that way.
Okay, great. And you're where now? You're in Palm Springs practicing?
Yes, Palm Springs, California.
Great. So
just moved here back from the East Coast, and really excited to be here.
Great, great.
And I have
so
Kundalini
people passing through Palm Springs. Yeah, tell us when you have them.
Well, I work all through the week. Just, you know, come in, we'll find a class. I also teach privately. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer questions through, just send me an email through Facebook at Barry Rocchio Yoga.
Great. Great, Barry. So, good. Anybody's passing through Palm Springs area, please look up Barry Rocchio and they'll help you open in your Kundalini, become more conscious so you can deal with what's happening in the world today. Barry, thank you very, very much for coming on. It was very, very enlightening.
Well, thank you. It was nice talking with you guys.
Great. Now, please, how's things out there with the drought?
Well, it's dry and it's kind of desperate, but
right.
It's happened before, and, you know, hopefully we'll get through it.
Right. Well, keep spreading some light, man.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Barry. Thanks a lot for coming on.
All right. Take care.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Steve.
Hello.
Steve. Yes, I'm here.
Hello. Yes.
I'm going to play a couple commercials, then we'll come back and talk about what's happening in the world today.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.
Hey, it's Mike Hsu. Summer is coming. Are you ready to grow? Then contact the Northeastern Institute of Cannabis for the best summer school experience ever. At NIC, you can be ready to work in the growing cannabis industry in just weeks. Sign up before June 1st and receive a summer enrichment scholarship valued at 20% off their normal tuition. Visit instituteofcannabis.com or call 508-655-7420 to find out about weekly open houses and tours. At the Northeastern Institute of Cannabis, they teach you grow.
Do you ever wake up and ask yourself what's really going on in the world you live in? It's time for you to be aware. It's the number one alternative website on the planet. Truthisscary.com. Daily stories. Log on daily to get the latest information on the stories that radio and TV wouldn't dare to cover. Experience our curriculum with over 20 topics from government conspiracies and extraterrestrials to meditation and nutrition, celebrity interviews. Watch exclusive videos with your favorite celebrities and find out what their alternative views are. It's your source for the information you won't find in the mainstream media. It's truthisscary.com. Log on today and be aware. Truthisscary.com.
All right, Steve. Well, that was interesting. I think I'm going to check out some Kundalini yoga classes. I've taken a couple myself, and it has helped. So you never know. I think it's something very important.
How did it benefit you? Like, what did you get from it?
You know, I felt, I'll tell you, I felt very light. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but almost like I was floating on air after I was done. Very interesting. A very interesting experience. I felt like I was floating on air. Very different than I've ever felt, I'll tell you that. And it was at one of his classes. It wasn't I've been to normal yoga and all I did was sweat. But that Kundalini stuff did. It made me feel different than the other yoga. Like the stuff you go to at the gym or whatever, you know, they have those classes.
Well,
that's what I used to go to.
My experience has shown me that if you are working something involving spiritual energy like that, and more than one kind of energy, which is the case in the case of Kundalini, that's what we're talking about, you really do shift into more than one. Your consciousness starts to become aware of more than one dimension. And that lightheadedness,
right,
and that euphoric feeling is really what, those are the byproducts of that, you know, took the Maharishi, I can't remember his name, but he was the guy.
Maharishi Yogi that the Beatles went to, Paramahansa.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I was aware of, I'm a student of Paramahansa.
Well, he used to say unbounded awareness. You know, when you reach unbounded awareness, you start to see things differently. And that's what we're really talking about. It's unbounded. You start to bleed out into other dimensions, or at least your awareness does. You're already in those dimensions, but you don't really feel them until you are aware of them. And Einstein even talked about that. And so really, it sounds like what you're telling me is that once your awareness began to blossom because of those yoga sessions, you really started to feel differently because you were aware of the different dimensions. So that's pretty good.
Right. And when people talk about dimensions, they don't really understand. Those dimensions are right here on Earth. And it's really, like you said, a matter of your consciousness being in different dimensions. Really meaning that your awareness of the things in the world just opens up. So everybody talks about this fourth dimension, you know, 4D. How do you reach 4D? Well, this is how you reach 4D with Kundalini yoga, with meditation, with, you know, doing the right things, and you know, looking for the light. This is how you reach the fourth dimension, which really is just the awareness that you are one with everything. And because you are one with everything, you therefore have a certain amount of control of how your world happens, you know, and it's, you know, there's obviously a lot more factors to that, but once you become aware of that, you start becoming aware of the, of how you can connect with an animal. Do you know what I mean? And how you, you know, how you can communicate with an animal and how trees respond to your touch. And you know what I mean? And the energy, you can start feeling energy off of other things.
And then, you know,
because your awareness.
We talked earlier in the show about how, you know, I talked about how the Masons and the Yogis, you wouldn't put them together, that they're not dealing with the same thing at all. And in fact, they probably are dealing with those same energies and calling them by much different names. And like one example of what you're talking about with animals, and trees, the earth itself, is St. Francis of Assisi, who's one of the most famous Christians in all of history, who happened to be a stigmatic, he could talk to animals and they would come to him. There was no barrier left. They could sense his awareness.
Right.
He could sense, you know, he could sense the vibrations from the forest and from the animals and from the earth itself. And he did it in a context of, you know, the Holy Trinity and the whole religious context. And that's fine, but you can't deny, based on the historical record, that that's what he was experiencing. He was aware of all these dimensions, and not all of them, but all the ones that he did become aware of. He knew about them, and he accepted it and embraced it. So there's an example right there. That's probably why he was a stigmatic, by the way. For those that don't know what I'm talking about, it's someone who suffers from stigmata, spontaneously generates wounds on their body, and
where Jesus
had been wounded.
The wounds that were Jesus's, specifically wounds in the hands, feet, and in the side.
They're the five
correct
wounds, right? Right. Exactly.
And the hands, and then the two on the feet where the nails went through.
And then
the
one on the
and
side,
then the spear right. went through on the side. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right.
Right. Right. So that's, you're right. There are many ways. I'm sure the Masons are not sitting around doing poses, but they do have breathing exercises, and there is, who knows what's in their rituals. I mean, I've heard some of them. They don't seem very spiritual to me, but you never know. I mean, you know, whatever their idea of light is. But
I
think they're using...
I've been to some churches, you know, and I'm not going to say which denomination.
That are just as bad. Right.
Just as bad.
Right.
They go through the motions, but there's no spiritual connection in there, right?
Right. I mean, you know, everybody says the Masons are like these evil devil worshippers. Have you ever been to a Catholic service?
Right.
You talk about eating your Savior and drinking his blood. I mean, what is that, vampires?
Well, let's put it this way. I've never seen a group of Masons getting brought up on charges of child rape, but I have seen Catholic priests brought up on charges like that. So, I mean,
well,
let's start doing
actually over there in
here,
England,
you know.
A few of the royals are getting busted, and they are Masons. So,
yeah,
might have to take that back. Remember, Prince Andrew is a Mason.
Right.
And he's in a little bit of trouble right now. But anyway.
Barry mentioned a little bit about earth changes and how the consciousness of more and more people we hinted at how their consciousness and their positivity create an actual energy that shifts things, right? And, you know, we're looking at this new volcano coming up out of the ocean right off the coast of Oregon. You know,
right.
We're looking at Iceland.
Chile.
Again. Chile was like huge, right?
And then there's the other one. What's the one that's going right now in Chile, there was another one.
Well, the
then there's an earthquake in Nepal.
Nepal was volcanic in nature, and there was an earthquake. And they said, the geologists said, based on what we've seen, there's another worse one coming, like right now, coming anytime for Nepal.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting how he mentioned how his teacher came here years ago to spread this because he knew this was coming and how the people who were of consciousness knew. Now, I'm not going to say that we are any kind of, you know, yogis or anything like that, but shit, we knew about this coming 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying we're yogis, but, I mean, maybe they knew 20 years ago, but at least we're on the right path of kind of being aware and conscious enough to, with the earth and the changes, to know what was coming. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know if you remember or not. You probably do.
But I kind of knew since I was a child that this was going to happen. I was just waiting for the different signals to show me.
When 9/11 happened, I don't know if you remember, but prior to 9/11 happening, for a period of 3-4 days, a week, there were lots of people, regular folks, who were getting these foreboding dreams, foreboding visions, foreboding feelings of angst. Some people that always went to a certain place on a certain day because it was their job or it was their routine or whatever, didn't.
Change
and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's that same vibrational perception that is a different dimension. You are aware of time before it occurs. That's definitely a different dimension. And
right.
People were aware that something really big and really bad is about to happen. They all knew it. Most of them couldn't put their finger on
yep.
it. And they didn't know what it was, yep. but they saw it coming.
I saw it since I was a kid. I had a vision of it. I was just waiting for the different, and I saw it with 9/11. Speaking of 9/11, let's talk okay. about some of the positive things. We talk about a shift in consciousness, okay? And
yeah.
we've discussed okay. this with Michael Murphy as well, that we were possibly getting to critical mass, whereas there are now enough people who are aware and who are ready to speak out and stop taking the bullshit that the people in power are starting to get worried. So let's talk
right.
about some positive things for our movement that have been happening
right.
over the past couple weeks. First one that comes to mind, obviously, is the indictment of the 6 officers who killed Freddie.
Yeah.
To me, that is a positive step. I don't know about you. What's your take on it?
Well, here's my take on it. I'm going to be real brief about it. But I want my words to have as much impact as possible. Here's what my take is. They should be indicted, obviously. It was explained to me the other day. It takes a while for most white folks, and I'm a white folk, as are you, to not have that knee-jerk defensive posture when someone of color wants to talk to you about privilege and how you don't get it and so forth. And they go, oh, I'm not racist. You know, you automatically start going on the defensive. But if you don't do that.
Right. And I was like that.
Just, right. So was I. And you don't do
but
that.
But I think I had the same awakening you had.
The privilege
that
is
it's real.
If you get in your car and you go start your car and get out of the driveway and go down the street, down the other street, go to the store, you know, whatever you got to go do. You're thinking to yourself, if you get stopped by the police for whatever friggin' stupid reason, it's just going to be annoying, a pain in the ass. The cop might have an attitude, but you'll probably end up continuing to go on your way. A black
Unless
person,
you are one of those white people who have warrants. I mean, obviously, if
well,
you're a white person, you have warrants. Or if your freaking bumpers are falling off and you have a license plate, they're going to pull you over.
But people who haven't done a thing, they're not carrying
right.
any
if their
drugs,
tail light
is
the only thing that's wrong,
right.
they don't have to worry.
There's no weapon. There's
but
no,
you're saying a black
legal.
Person gets pulled over, and this is true. A black person gets
matter.
Pulled over, and we've seen it online with a fucking tail light out. And he gets
right.
his shit beat out.
Right.
And you put it
right.
perfectly. You can get stopped for walking or driving while black.
That's right. You can get killed.
And I finally black. Came to this realization. Because I was one of those people who said, well, as long as I'm not racist,
right.
then, you know, how could anybody else be? You know what I mean? How could we be like this and, you know, get all the fence? You know, because I really had believed we had made some progress. But after these last 3 cases, and especially Freddie, where this fucking guy did nothing, and they just stopped him, whether he had warrants on him or not, or whether he was a fucking known criminal or not,
He was just walking down the street, and they killed, and then he ended up dead 6 hours later.
He was a regular Joe, minding his business, walking down the street, and they approached him and grabbed him and threw him down, and in the process of manhandling him.
They already beat him before they threw him in the van. You could see the guy wasn't even walking on his own power.
He already had a partially severed spinal cord. He'd already had a partially severed spinal cord. Before they ever made it to the paddy wagon, he was already paralyzed.
Yeah, he couldn't walk. They dragged him in.
Right, right. So here's a man with a spinal cord injury who's saying, I need medical attention. And they kept telling him, and I'm paraphrasing, they kept telling him, well, too fucking bad. Fuck you, shut up.
Right.
And they threw him like a sack of potatoes in this van. Now they've already screwed his back up. Even if he lives, he's not.
Without a seatbelt.
Some vans
aren't equipped with a seatbelt. But these had a seatbelt. They didn't put it on purpose, and they drove like a fucking maniac. It's been documented that they drove crazy to make him bounce around the back of the fucking van. Now, I don't know what the other prisoner did, but apparently he was strapped in. So why wasn't Freddie strapped in?
They get him to the cell in the holding unit. Concrete box, basically, is all it is.
He's dead.
And they throw him on the floor.
He's already dead.
He's not dead yet. He says, I need medical attention. And they kept telling him, shut up. And he's not laying on the floor with a busted spine where he dies. He did not get any medical attention. He didn't get seen by anybody.
Right.
He was in that box for 6 days. Six days.
For what?
There's a video of him laying on the
resisting
floor. For being black.
Well, right. Well, what did they end up charging? How do you hold somebody for 6 days without a charge?
There's another police department, okay, they're rolling up the street in a, you know, sort of a nice area. There's a restaurant and everything. Tree-lined street, you know, awnings over the entryways to businesses and so forth. And there's a middle-aged, you know, kind of almost overweight, you know, average-looking white guy. And he's probably 40. Or something, and he has, you know, he's not going to be on GQ this week. You know, he has kind of frumpy hair and glasses and kind of a geek. And with him is this really beautiful black woman who's probably at least 10 years younger than him, wearing Daisy Dukes and a, you know, little shirt.
Oh, I heard about this, yeah.
And, you know, she's all acting friendly with him. The police slam the brakes, get out of their car, more than one cop.
Think she's a hooker,
another
right?
Another cruiser shows up. They grab her without even asking her her name. They grab her, and they also confront him. What's your ID? And they say, we need your ID. And they to him, we need your ID. He gave his ID. She wouldn't. She says, I don't need to give you any damn ID. I haven't done anything wrong. And she was right. But the thing is, they grabbed her because she wouldn't give ID. They threw her in the back of a police car, and she's being hysterical because you have no right to do this to me, blah, 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 and which is true, by the way. And
yes,
and they had this big problem because she wouldn't give ID. They were going to charge her with soliciting prostitution. He was a Hollywood and is a Hollywood producer. She is his wife, who happens to be an Oscar-nominated actress. And all they could see was nigger whore, and they grabbed her ass.
Right.
This is the America we live in. You know,
right,
and I finally realized that. Yeah.
It's bad. It's gotten bad, but this is a positive step. Let's try and keep it positive.
Okay.
This was a positive step. Hopefully they'll get convicted. And the next thing I saw, I don't know if you know this, but the Patriot Act was not renewed.
I did not know that.
Did you see that? The Patriot Act was not renewed, and basically the reason was due to lack of interest. It didn't get enough votes to pass. So not even enough Congress people cared enough to show up to re-sign on the Patriot Act for another, you know, whatever, how many years. So it right now is in limbo because, yeah, they don't know what to do because they want it in, but legally they can't put it back in because it wasn't passed. So they don't know what they're going to do with that right now. So that's an interesting thing, right? How Congress is so apathetic and they don't even care anymore that not enough of them showed up, bothered to show up to vote to pass it.
I would like to see the USA Commission.
I'd love to see the list. So that's gone. Here's another one. Jade Helm. Remember we talked about Jade Helm?
Yes.
Two states now, counties, various counties in two different states, have canceled the Jade Helm exercise in their area due to public outcry because of people finding out about it on the internet.
Right.
Not bad.
You cannot just have your way.
Not bad.
The American people, right, the American people speak up and they're afraid. And somebody, you know, I think I mentioned to you earlier on the phone that a long time, several decades, highly trained professional person in healthcare without any provocation from me said to me the way they treat poor people in this country, right, the way they treat poor people in this country, that there's a backlash coming and that the people are not going to take this anymore. And
Steve,
I can't wait to see
you say that.
Why?
I just saw an article. 96% of Americans think there could be a revolution this summer.
Really?
96%.
Wow.
Think that there could be a revolution this summer. That's pretty freaking large. I mean, like you say, when a health worker in a regular old hospital walks up to you, probably someone who's not as awake as you and I are, who hasn't been studying this shit for 10 years, says that, can see it, then you know. It's just like anything else. Once it starts getting into the mainstream consciousness, you know it's, you know, we're getting closer. Now, me personally, I don't want to see a revolution. I don't know about you. I think it's just going to hurt those of us who really don't want to go out there and, you know, go out there and hit the streets. But
well, there's different ways to define revolution, too. I think there needs to be a revolution.
I would like a conscious revolution.
Yes, consciousness revolution, The consciousness revolution is taking place when guys like you and I can actually talk with each other without raising any voices, without getting upset, saying, you know what, we're not racist, but we might as well be if we just stand by. So that has to change. And that's a revolution in consciousness.
Right.
We own it.
And
we
right.
accept it.
I don't want to see martial law.
Right.
I really don't want to see martial law, and I don't want to see a police state put in. However, if what we are doing, if this is the backlash that happens, I personally would rather see noncompliance. That is going to be the route I plan to take on a personal level. However, if this is the result of what we're doing, if this is part of the shift that has to happen, well then, it has to happen. Because I don't want the New World Order. And that's what it comes down to. You know? But so those are some positive things. Chipotle dropped GMOs from their menu. That's a positive
thing.
That's
a good deal. Yeah, it is.
5 years ago, you never even heard about GMO labeling.
Right.
So Chipotle dropped GMOs. So these are some of the positive things that are coming out. The CDC just said that Monsanto's Roundup is toxic and causes cancer, and 30,000 doctors demanded it to be banned.
It's some of the worst stuff ever invented.
Right, and they're finally finding that out, and they're finally trying to do something about it. Did you hear that Barack Obama's own brother came out and called him a ruthless, deceitful liar?
Really?
Yeah, I'm reading the article right now. It was in a film. His brother Malik has very strong views about his brother, even claims that he may not be of that same parentage. Very interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, these things, you know, these are things we've known for a long time. We know that he's a fake. He's a phony.
But, well, remember, you know, now when you're dealing with your government, it's like a car sales dealership. You can talk to the salesman, but he's still got to go back to the back office to get authorization. Those people decide.
Got
to
see your supervisor.
Salesman doesn't do the deciding. Salesman just gives you the sales pitch. And so the president is the salesman, and the people in the back room are the ones that decide.
Right, exactly. And that's who really runs the show, right? He's just the fucking front person who does that. So, yeah, so there are some good things going on, Steve, that we, you know, we know that things are really crazy over there in Baltimore right now. They seem to be focusing on that. I mean, yesterday they had a shooting in Texas, I understand. Now, this is what's crazy. Why do you poke the snake? Why would you hold an anti-Islam art show where you had people trying to draw pictures of Muhammad and paint pictures of Muhammad? Why would you poke the snake and not think that that's going to be trouble?
These are people that want to see Armageddon. The people that we're dealing with in this story, these are the people that are ascribed as being truth Iscariotes. You know what I mean? All the truth sites. There are people that think that all the people that are looking at alternative information or conspiracy theories or whatever, that it's because they want to see it happen. Well, the truth is that the overwhelming majority...
We want to stop it.
We want to stop it. We want to ring the bell and tell everybody, oh, by the way, I'm sounding the alarm. Look what we found. Let's get this out into the light of day and put a stop to it. That's what the truth sites are about.
Right.
You know, but there are some...
Not let's we hope it happens. Who the fuck would want that to happen?
The people that...
You think I want to live in a new world order?
Well, look at ISIS, and then look at some of the hardline right-wing Christian types. They aren't very far apart ideologically, and they both want to fulfill prophecy. But in the book, it says, you know, there's the Book of Revelations, and then the Armageddon, and all, they got to fulfill prophecy. You know, this is the Lord's will. This is what they want.
They don't have to fulfill. Let them. Well, and truthfully, what do you think the people in charge are trying to do?
Right.
They're trying to fulfill the scripture, but from their own aspect. That freaking book has just caused so many goddamn problems in our world.
Right.
That, and nobody even knows where it really came from. A king wrote it.
Right.
Give me a break.
Right.
Anyway, though. But look, we've made good progress, and, you know, things are changing. I wouldn't keep doing this. I know you wouldn't keep doing this if we didn't think there was any type of hope. So, I mean, that's the best we could say. I mean, we got about 30 seconds left. You got anything you want to plug, Steve?
The usual, yes, northernpsychics.com. We have an international clientele, and you could be one of them, yeah.
Definitely check out northernpsychics.com and truthisscary.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll see you all next week on The Red Pill.
This is The Red Pill.
All right. All right, Steve. I'm going to hang up because it records us.
Okay.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah.